3-2. Meetings will be held at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue, Portland, Oregon, unless otherwise noted. The Events Committee meets the third Thursday of each month at 6 p.m. Please call 503-231-8032 to verify if a meeting is being held.
This is KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Coming up next, the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show covers politics, history, and the state of the zeitgeist with a liberal dose of listener calls.
KBOO Community Radio is hiring a morning news and public affairs director, as well as an evening news and public affairs director to manage the news and public affairs programming. For these two full-time positions, we're looking for people with proven experience in audio production, management, and supervisory skills with volunteers, with an emphasis on teamwork in a collaborative setting, and the ability to work under strict deadlines. KBOO Community Radio is an equal opportunity and affirmative action employer. Women and people of color are encouraged to apply. The deadline to apply for both of these positions is Monday, July 1st at midnight. More information can be found at kboo.fm/employment.
Hey, good morning, good morning, good morning. Well, it could be a good morning, depending on where you're sitting and what you're afraid of. This is KBOO 90.7 on the FM dial. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with me, Joe Uris, and with Abe Proctor, who's taking the day off to go to the beach, lucky devil. And I want to remind you that, of course, this is a talk radio program. You should call in, 231-8187. I want to focus today on the American foreign policy and the warrior state, which is what we've been for a long, long time. I would say ever since World War II. So let's start with a couple of facts, or two or three or four or so. In the 50s, we had what was known as the Cold War. If you follow popular culture and even movies and so on, you know that there was a transfer of sentiments after World War II to move against the Soviet Union, which had grabbed up all of Eastern Europe in the course of its victory over the Nazis. By the way, an understanding of World War II must include the fact that the brunt of the attacks and the significance of the victory largely belonged to the Soviet Union. This is an unpleasant fact for Americans. It wasn't that D-Day wasn't a heroic event. It wasn't that our fighting in Africa and in Italy and in France and so on. It wasn't that these weren't brave and hard activities, and it wasn't that we didn't lose a lot of lives, and it wasn't that we didn't really do amazing things with things like D-Day. But the fact of the matter was that it was the Soviet Union that beat back the Nazis, destroyed their power, and eventually, quite legitimately in the sense of warfare, occupied Eastern Europe. That was their loot out of the war. And essentially, it's really important to understand this. The situation was that we would have had to actually have a war with the Soviet Union to have pried them out of Eastern Europe. But time took its toll, and eventually the Soviet Union collapsed. I think it was an economic system that had no real basis in the norms of economics. And I also think that in the great sense of time, it's really bad to try to keep imperial, undemocratic power over long, long periods of time. Although, again, this is something that will be tested once more in what's now called Russia and probably in China. However, we need to understand the history of those times, and we need to understand it in terms of what I would call the real politic of those times. So in the 1950s, we made a transition very quickly into an anti-communist position, and there were all kinds of movies, including film noir, as it's called, where lines like, "I may be a thief, but I ain't no red," became very popular. All of the leftists in the film industry were driven into either confessing their leftism or leaving in terror. 10 people in Hollywood went to jail, the Hollywood 10. And the transition in movie making was visible. You could see from the time of films like Gentleman's Agreement and Watch on the Rhine, both of which were anti-fascist and both of which were concerned with minority relations, moving from that to the kind of light Marilyn Monroe-ish musicals and other things of an irrelevant nature that dominated the studio industry in Hollywood and left America kind of in a sweet place. And that all was reinforced by the sitcoms of the television industry, a new industry. So, in the 1950s, and from 53 to 54, the government of Mossadegh in Iran, and this is my point, which was a legitimately elected government, was overthrown by the CIA, largely with the cooperation of the British, and particularly with the Iranian, Anglo-Iranian Oil Company. And installed in its place was the old Shah of Iran, who ran an organization called the SAVAK, which was a secret terror police organization, much feared for good reason, which engaged in all kinds of terrifying confessional techniques, particularly and notably sexual abuse, rape, and so on. This went on for a long, long time. Meanwhile, the strength of Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates continued on. Now, you got to understand the real politic of the Middle East in terms of a, like the fights of the West on the question of Catholicism versus Protestantism, there is and has been for a much longer period of time a struggle between two forms of Islam, the dominant two forms, Shia and Sunni. And the Sunnis are the people who we understand to be, the dominant force that we support. And the Shia are the force that we do not support, and it is Shia Islam that is dominant in Iran. Now, this, you know, the business of throwing the Mossadegh legit government out in 53-54 and then reinstalled the Shah continued on for quite a period of time. But I want to make another point here, which is that the whole history of the Cold War, beginning with the Korean War and notably in Vietnam and then the Gulf Wars, were always about the United States dominating the region and always built upon lies. Remember that Vietnam began with the Gulf of Tonkin resolution, which was a lying report about how we had been attacked by the North Vietnamese, which was not true. And then, situation in the Middle East, you will remember, of course, that the Gulf War, particularly Gulf War II, was based on lies. The yellow cake uranium, the weapons of mass destruction, the terror of Saddam Hussein, who was not a nice guy, all of which were propagandized and supported and embarrassingly supported in the UN, and all of which were lies for the most part. Now, I don't want to say that Saddam Hussein was a good guy. He wasn't. He was a terrifying dictator. But whether or not we should have engaged in the Gulf Wars is another question. But going back into the situation, we got embroiled in a war in Korea, which nearly resulted in American defeat because the North Koreans were able to bring into play the very great power of the newly released forces of the Chinese Communist movement, and that put us into not just a stalemate, but nearly lost us the war. It was only good luck and hard fighting and deep suffering that brought us to a stalemate close to the original 38th parallel. 38th parallel, of course, was a compromise between Soviet power and American power at the end of World War II. But it's really important to understand that that was one of our many, many wars that would follow in the so-called Cold War period that would follow after the victories of World War II. Then came the Gulf of Tonkin resolution and the Vietnam War, which lasted from 64 to 76. I'm telling you all this not because I don't think you know it, but it's good to recall the role, the very aggressive role of America under the guise of fighting communism and the more and more irrelevant elements of that. All of it, while in essence could be perceived as an okay struggle against the totalitarian regimes of the Soviets and the Chinese, who were perceived as a single bloc, all of that was enriching at the time and making more and more powerful the military-industrial complex. Now, with the Gulf War, or Gulf Wars 1 and 2, and with the lying about the yellow cake uranium and weapons of mass destruction, and in the end, the capture of Saddam Hussein, and then the rise of various fundamentalist Islamic forces, many of them Shia, in Iraq, we began what I would have to call an endless occupation. And with the attack on the World Trade Center, the United States responded in a, I think, really rather clumsy way. It took us a long, long time to capture the actual responsible parties. And by the way, there's still a huge movement. I wouldn't call it a left movement, but a movement suggesting that the towers were brought down by somebody else. That is not, I don't think, a reasonable argument, but it's very popular. And all of this takes place in the context of eventually in 79, this is before the Gulf War, the Shah was overthrown by angry people. And this is important to understand. The President of the United States said, okay, well, you can come here and have we can give you health care and so on. The Shah was overthrown, being out of the country, and installed in his place was a very fundamentalist movement, both freedom-based and, more importantly, very fundamentalist in a religious sense, which then, in response to all of that, quickly took over the American embassy and held captive the American embassy staff, which put Jimmy Carter, President of the United States, in a terrible bind. He attempted to rescue them, you'll remember this if you're old enough, with a military action that failed completely. And there was a deal made, there's no question about this, to essentially release the American hostages after a Republican victory at the end of that period of time. So, this is the setup for all of this. So, really, we have had this kind of endless war for a long, long time. Now, what's really essentially important about understanding all of this is the degree to which the American people were misinformed or lied to in the process of waging this so-called Cold War. And the dangers of that as the military-industrial complex became bigger and bigger and bigger. Why do I talk about this? Because right now we have a madman, a fascist, as President of the United States, who is flirting with, if not intending to, make a war on Iran. Now, Iran's not a good guy here. Iran obviously has its own interests at heart. It did make a deal with the Americans and with the European powers to not develop nuclear weapons, and that deal was backed out of by President Trump. So things are in a weird flux in the region. Remember, we are also still in Vietnam, we're also still in the Middle East, and all the big players, particularly Russia and the United States, are involved here. This is the context in which we now face the very grave possibility of a false flag or phony war in Iran. I cannot say with any kind of accuracy exactly what happened with the two tankers. It is possible that radical elements or even the government of Iran engaged in an effort to destroy the tankers or to make the Gulf, essentially the whole movement of oil in the region, very difficult. That I cannot say because I do not know, and there's nobody to tell me the truth, really. I am very doubtful of the validity of the American assumption that this was a deliberate act of the Iranian government. On the basis of that, and on the basis of Trump's aggressive policies, we're about to engage, I am pretty sure, in a war in Iran. And the reason for it is not because of the behavior of the Iranians or any of that. In fact, the actual reason is the fact that Donald Trump, who's a criminal, a mafia-style guy, is facing a lot of trouble. And if he can get a war of distraction, he'll take it. Very likely. Very likely. And this all is taking place in the context of the next election. So I'm creeped out. I'm worried. And I think you should be, too. I do not see large enough crowds in the streets. I do not hear a large enough sentiment against war. And it takes a while to build an anti-war movement, apparently, and I just am very frightened. And I do not in any way trust the current American government. So, you know, setting things up like that is just the beginning. I'd love to hear from you. If you think I'm wrong, I'd love to hear from you. If you think I'm right, I'd love to hear from you. If you have new evidence, I'm even more eager to hear from you. But let's go to the phones, 231-8187. James, you're on the air.
Good morning, Joe.
Morning.
In the 1970s, Professor Anthony Sutton, he was a Stanford University professor, and he was a member of the Hoover Institute.
Uh-huh.
He proved that capitalists from America funded the Bolshevik Revolution and funded the Soviet Union, and they created this faction so as basically to create a way to transfer wealth out of the hands of the American people and into the hands of the industrial capitalists.
Okay, I know nothing of this, so go ahead.
You can look it up. You look him up, Anthony Sutton.
Okay.
He was a Stanford University professor. You don't know this because this information has been suppressed. He was nearly destroyed for trying to bring this information to the public. He was trying to bring information in the Vietnam War. Ford trucks were being used. The Soviet Union was using Ford trucks. They were sending Ford trucks for the Vietnamese to use.
Okay, let me say this. It's entirely possible that American corporations would be supplying any nation that would buy their products. I think there is an irony there, and I'm not disputing what you're saying. I just simply know nothing of it.
Yeah. What it is, basically, they're putting on a big charade, and it's designed to keep us from having no understanding of what's going on, to where we have no control of our government. That's what it's all for.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for the call, man. I appreciate the information. I will check it out. So that's useful. There are many issues, many elements of both legitimate and non-legitimate sense of conspiracy in all of the Cold War and all of the recent activities of the U.S. government. One thing that is certain, the military-industrial complex has profited enormously by the Cold War. It is also certain that the United States had a major role in bringing about the bankruptcy of the Soviet Union. But it's also the case that the particular economic order created by the Soviets was not a viable economic system. I want to put in a little pitch here for something that's a little bit off this topic, but is relevant. There is right now an attempt within the Democratic Party and, of course, within the Republican Party and with the Trump people to equate socialism in the model of the Soviets and the Chinese, both different models, but in that model, with social democracy. Social democracy is a system whereby there is a welfare state that supports the needs of ordinary people while capitalism flourishes. You can see it in Scandinavia and other places. It is not the same as the so-called socialism that we've seen in, let's say, Cuba or in Russia or in China. And then this is it's a lie that is being promulgated right now in some elements of the Democratic Party and in a large part in the Republican Party and certainly in the Trump administration. But understand the difference and realize that social democracy is democracy. It allows political parties of differing views, and it allows capitalism while an undergirding of the social network is accomplished through government programs to help ordinary folks in housing, in health care, in the environmental struggles, and so on. So, keeping that all in mind, and this is really important, you have to watch the game being played right now to decide who will be the Democratic candidate for president and whether or not Trump will become president yet again, which I consider very likely. Let's go out to Robbie, 231-8187. Robbie, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe.
Good morning.
I wanted to just quickly follow up with your previous caller about basically I subscribe to everything he just said. That is really good information. If you want more information, Joe, there's a great book called None Dare Call It Conspiracy.
Oh, I know that book, Allen. Yeah. Yeah, go ahead.
That actually describes the end and how the oligarchs and how the cabal, how the billionaires, whatever you want to call them, the military complex industry, how they colluded to end Soviet Russia and then, you know, move forward. That was their power play, basically getting beyond. They convinced us that communism was over and then used capitalism as an authoritarian government that we all now are blind to. Anyway, going forward, I wanted to actually link this together. And what you were talking about with Hollywood, are you aware of Operation Mockingbird?
No. I may know it. I don't know it by that name. What is it?
Well, I'll just quickly go over it, and I'll get back listening to it. I really appreciate what you're doing. Operation Mockingbird is a program that the CIA initiated in, I believe, the early 50s. And basically what they did is they put CIA payroll were then told to go out and through the media, and basically they became media pundits. They started working for ABC, CNN, news stations at the time, and basically what happened there was sorry, can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Yeah, basically Operation Mockingbird, as it's called, was our CIA's effort to control the media and basically propagandize everything. And right now it's no longer called Operation Mockingbird, but I do want to point out people such as Anderson Cooper. Mm-hmm. He was a CIA intern, a very straight-up CIA intern, and then basically just kind of went from interning with CIA to now being a talk show host, you know, talk show guy for CNN that we all know. Anyway, Joe, thank you very much for everything. None Dare Call It Conspiracy. I really would tell people they should read that. That's a really interesting book if they do want to figure out why communism and, democracy have had such a fight. But anyway, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. I just want to be clear here. My knowledge of these efforts by the CIA and the specifics of what happened, I'm pretty weak on that. Where I am strong is on the larger historical picture. It is the case that the military-industrial complex in the United States, through a variety of means, both legitimate and illegitimate, encouraged a Cold War that wasted a lot of American treasure and, of course, a lot of American lives in places like Vietnam and then later in the wars in the Gulf. So I think the great danger of right now is because Trump is a criminal and has to worry about being prosecuted, he may want to have a war of distraction or push things to the edge of such a war, which can easily get out of control. And remember, Iran is not a democracy that is secure in the sense that it doesn't have its own powerful extremist elements, both religious elements and others, who could lead us and Iran into a fighting war with the United States. Let's get some more calls on 231-8187. Kevin, you're on the air. Kevin?
And you mentioned the Sunni versus
Shia.
Yeah, and that I don't think is made clear enough to the public generally that there's a difference when it comes to Islamic extremists and factor also I think is an important one to point out. If you look at the Iran-Iraq war and the debt that Saddam Hussein and Iraq ended up owing Saudi Arabia after that, that was a big element that, you know, basically was behind the invading Kuwait. There was a cross-drilling dispute, and there are a few other things going on there. But the main point is, after the U.S. invaded Iraq, if you look at just before that, OPEC...
Listen, I'm sorry, man. You're breaking up. You can either call again or I don't know. But your connection is very weak, and I can't hear you. So I would love to hear what you wanted to say, but this ain't the moment. Let me go to John 2318187. John, you're on the air.
Back in 1984, the BBC did an anti-nuclear war movie. It was called Threads.
Uh huh.
And it was United States also. I mean, ABC also had a movie. It was called The Day After.
I remember but The Day one, After.
Yeah. But this one's called Threads.
Uh-huh.
And it's a. You would to follow it, put it on close. What do you call it? Caption, because you know the British accent is very heavy. But you know, like it seems like when Europeans do a war movie, it's a little bit more detailed than how Americans do it because well, they've been there, done that, you know. But anyway, the movie, the premise of the movie, it starts out with the Soviet Union and United States having a conflict in the Persian Gulf, and it started out with oil tankers being, you know, torpedoed in the Persian Gulf, and then it escalated from there.
Well, that's ironic.
I don't know if they, who they is, but it seems like it came from a NATO playbook. And it's a drama documentary, and they have a narrator, and it's a little graphic, you know, whatever, even for 1984. And of course, it ends up with a nuclear holocaust and a nuclear winter and blah blah blah. So anyway, I don't know. It's pretty depressing, but it's, you know, it's educational, I guess. And it, like I said, it went in detail how everything escalated.
And you're saying it's like the playbook of what's happening now.
Well, yeah, that's why I revisited the movie because I saw it back in '84,
uh-huh.
And then I had this trigger. I said, "Wait a minute, I've seen this before."
I think we call it déjà vu all over again.
Yeah, déjà vu. Yeah, yeah. So I went and researched and got the film. I mean, put it on my TV, I should say.
Yeah.
Because I have all the bells and whistles of, you know, of cable. And so, yeah, I did a search, and there it was. Unfortunately, I had to buy the film to see it. It wasn't on demand.
Yeah.
But it was only $7.99.
Okay.
But anyway, I will just say that the film started out with in the Persian Gulf and shipping being torpedoed.
That's interesting. It's interesting that a fictionalized account would follow or would lead a playbook that we're seeing come true. I'm very frightened that Trump is...
Yeah.
I don't think he really, really wants a war, but I think he wants to play with the war. And I think that he's so clumsy and he's supported by these incredible warrior types that we could well fall into a war with Iran and others. And I think that this would be another horrible waste of treasure and lives, and I think it could lead to something far worse. So I'm very concerned. I want to see a huge anti-war movement, and I'm disappointed that we're not seeing it. I think one of the things that's happening is we're so distracted by Trump's criminality and general ballsiness that we're not paying attention to the underlying dangers involved. But I want to thank you for that suggestion. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, okay, bye.
All right, and then 2318187, I want to go to another John. You're on the air.
Yeah, I'll add to the conspiracy theory talk.
Okay, no harm in that, I guess.
Well, you know, recently, and I don't remember exactly what the details were, but I heard that what's his name? Eric Prince was meeting with...
Oh, Eric Prince. I'm glad you brought him up. Yeah, he's the he has a private army, and his sister is the Secretary of Education and trying to destroy public education. Go ahead.
And he's kind of failed at trying to drum up mercenary business for his company. In the last couple years, I think he tried in Afghanistan. I'm not sure about Iraq, but I imagine. Anyway, he's kind of failed there, and so if it's true that he's been meeting with Trump, then Occam's razor tells me he may be behind these attacks blamed on Iran.
Well, I don't know the truth of that, but it's interesting. It's an interesting conspiracy theory. It's certainly the case that in the Seychelles, there was a meeting which included him planning for American activity under the Trump administration, and that's an important point.
Well, the other thing I want to bring out, this I think I heard on Jesse Dollimore, one of those shows on YouTube. It actually showed Trump in 2011 accusing Obama of planning to start a war with Iran. It showed several clips of these accusations.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that's true. The thing about all of this stuff is that it can have an element of truth or be totally true, but you can't always follow up and figure out what exactly is going on. So something which fits in with your or my beliefs may or may not be accurate. It may be accurate in part or in whole. It's just really difficult under the strictures of an open media system to know what the hell exactly is going on. I don't know, and I want to be clear about this, exactly what happened with these two tankers in the Persian Gulf. My suspicion is that it is not what it is described as with the Trump administration, particularly since it's in foreign policy led by would-be World War III-ers. And I want to thank you for your suggestion. There's a lot of material out there. It's hard to sift through it and know exactly what's true, what's partially true, or what's really true. Anyway, thanks a lot.
Discussion.
Thanks a lot for the call. All right, we got another person calling us, 231-8187. By the way, I'm not hearing some women's voices, and I would think I would in this case where I believe that we are on the edge of war, just so Trump, for no other reason than this, that Trump can avoid the prosecution that is his due. Hey, George, you're on the air.
Hey, good morning, Joe. I just wanted to mention a couple of things, a couple of books. One is by a guy named Arno J. Mayer, I think a professor working with, well, he may have been at Stanford, but he published a book called Wilson versus Lenin about 1917 to 18. And in that book, he says that the U.S. Resolved and Britain resolved that after World War One, they would do what they could to get going on a full war against the Soviet Union.
Yeah, that's true.
And then I also read elsewhere, I read a book by Kim Philby, the notorious Soviet spy who worked for the British MI6
right
for about, I don't know, 15 years maybe. And he tells in his book, My Secret War, and I think this is also supported by some other books, but he tells how while he was working for MI6 in the 40s, the British were quietly waiting for the near end of World War II, and they, in May 45, before the war was over, Churchill had already sent a message to the military arm of the British government that it's time to prepare for the assault on the Soviet Union. And I have also seen something in Chomsky referring to the origin of the Cold War in the immediate years right after World War II. And apparently the British tried to get an army together after World War II, according to, I think it's Arno Mayer. And when they tried, they put call out for people to sign up for a great new experience, a war against the Soviet Union, and it fell dead before it could recruit enough people. I just thought I'd mention these things.
That's interesting stuff. Let me add to that, since we're getting into Paranoia City. Let me add this. I wrote an article in response to the fact that the Soviet Union, the then Soviet Union, was using its airplanes to harass and come close to the American coast and its ships way back, I don't know, it's like 20, 30 years ago. And I wanted to point out that during the period of the later part of World War II, the United States definitely had put together, once the bomb was a reality, had put together a plan under Curtis LeMay to bomb major cities in the Soviet Union. This is real. This is not conspiracy. And in fact, one of the reasons why we built intercontinental bombers initially before the end of the war was not because we thought that Europe would totally fall to the Nazis, but rather because it wasn't the case at that point, but rather because there was this real element that wanted to finish the Soviets, because they would be very weakened, it was thought, with a nuclear war. So this is not just paranoia. This is actual part of the planning of not everyone, but many in the government at that time. It is contributed, of course, to the enormous paranoia of the Stalinist government. Anyway, I just want to be clear here. That's a real thing.
And I would like to add that I do remember reading, and I can't remember where, that immediately after 1945, Germany, France, the U.S., Britain began a plan to send, I don't know if they were sent individually, but people to land at what they thought was secluded parts of the shore of the Soviet Union near Europe, or to parachute and land in the Soviet Union. But each time this happened, maybe not every time, but each time, these people who thought they were going to arrive there with explosives and, you know, food in order to last long enough to blow up a factory or blow up a railroad depot, they found themselves met by a group of Soviet soldiers who said, "Hi there, hands up." And it appears that there is this history of which for the period 1945 right on through the 50s when the U.S. was involved in this. And I just wanted to mention it, and I wish I had all these books.
Yeah, I don't know anything about that. So,
yeah, there are books, but I don't have them at hand. So there is one. I don't have it on my... I can't remember the title, but thanks for your time. People who look will find references to these, and I think this is another academically sound book. But people have to judge, and thank you for your time.
Sure. Thank you for the call. I want to mention domestically what was going on. Remember that from the time of the end of World War II, or a little bit before it, through the early, into the 1950s, really, there were a lot of socially concerned movies. During World War II, we were an ally of the Soviet Union, and there was a whole bunch of films and so on prior to the entry of the U.S. into World War II and during the war, which were essentially left-wing films. And there was a very strong intellectual community, particularly at Warner Brothers, that were pro-Soviet and also pro-social democracy. And they were driven out of Hollywood, particularly by Warner Brothers and, of course, by the House of American Activities Committee. This was the McCarthy period, as we call it. It is also important to understand that, for example, films like Gentleman's Agreement, which dealt with anti-Semitism after the war, and a whole host of other films were planned or executed, and then that was stopped with the essential attack on the left in Hollywood. That resulted in a reversal of the policies of most of the films that we saw, and that was the period after that when we had a very strong trend of lighthearted films and musical comedies and things in general that did not deal, except occasionally, with politics at all. In that period, Helen Hayes and others made a film called, gosh, I can't remember the name of it, but basically it was a film that purported to tell the story of the Soviets' effort to enter the United States government and to fake out things, and this was during the Korean War. So we really did have a national shifting of policy to a definitely anti-socialist and anti-Soviet policy and anti-social democratic policy in American film and other and television and other sources. And that was not an accident. That was real. And that is something that has never stopped. I want to go to other callers, 231-8187. Let's go to Francis. You're next.
Hi.
Hi.
I wasn't going to call today. I was just going to listen, but you asked where the women were, so here's one.
Okay.
I remember President Eisenhower warned about the military-industrial complex.
Yes.
And I heard that the banker, the owner of one of those oil ships, the Japanese one,
mm-hmm.
according to the people on the ship, it was not a mine. It was something that came from in the sky.
That's what I've heard also. I do right. not. Let me be clear, friends. I don't know what exactly happened there.
Right, I don't either. So I know it's all fabricated, whatever it is. And coming from my perspective as a woman, I can remember when I was 12 years old, I read All Quiet on the Western Front.
Mm-hmm.
While my family was at the beach one summer. And that book comes to my mind quite frequently because in my perspective, war is absurd. And that we still play those war games just for somebody's short-term profit, some corporation's short-term profit, is absurd. But we can see by what's happening in Yemen and it's heartbreaking what's happening in Yemen, and nobody talks about it. You know, thousands and thousands and thousands of children have been killed or dying of starvation. And what's happening with the immigrant children, you know, it's there's this callousness. And I don't know what our Congress is doing. I have no clue. I mean, I don't know how that man, that Senate Majority Leader McConnell, they're allowing this to happen. Our Congress is allowing these things to occur. The president should not even be near getting away with the things that he's gotten away with. But they're allowing it to happen. And as long as we keep allowing corporations to run things for short-term profit, people mm-hmm. are not being represented. The people are not being represented. And I wish we could find another way for those corporations to make money besides making war.
Well,
it'd be nice if maybe we could figure out a way to make children happy. That would be nice if we could make profits from that. We have to do it instantly so they wouldn't lose a penny of their short-term profits.
Well, it's a nice idea. I'm not sure exactly how that would work. Francis, I'm going to get some other people on, and I appreciate your comments.
When you guys talk about these wars and who's on whose side and who's on what side, to me, it sounds like a bunch of boys with their war toys. It's like, really? Is this still what you're doing now? I mean, can we move beyond that? It's not logical. It makes no sense. And all it does is destroy people and their lives. But anyway, take care.
No, I agree with you, and I thank you for the call. By the way, I talked about the Cold War, the shift in movies during the Cold War. The film that I was thinking of is a Helen Hayes movie called My Son John, which posited a communist conspiracy in Washington, D.C., and her son, she had two sons in the movie. One was off to Korea. The other son was a communist agent and eventually realized the error of his ways and was gunned down, I believe, on the steps of one of the government buildings in D.C. And it was really kind of a direct propaganda film and was probably pretty popular at the time. My Son John. You can look it up. You can Google it. And let's go to the phones again. 231-8187. Dennis, you're on the air. Dennis?
I'm still here.
Oh, you're still here. Hi.
Yeah.
We lost Dennis. Well, did you want to add anything else since you're still here?
Yeah, I just wanted to say that that's another thing that kind of is fascinating to me. All the espionage, all the I Spy, all the secrets. For what?
Well, for dominance, I think it was all real and all very, very unfortunate.
We're still doing it, though.
Oh, yes, of course.
What's the point?
Well, the point is to make wealth and power in the hands of people who want to be very wealthy and very powerful.
While we're oppressing all the people.
Well, to some degree, that's true. Yes.
That's insane.
It is.
All right.
All right. Thanks for the call. Oh, now we got Dennis. Dennis, you're on the air.
Thank you very much. You know, I'd like to agree with everything that Frances said. Especially, you know, she made the comment, I believe, at the beginning that the Japanese ship, and Japan itself claimed that it was hit by flying objects, not in the way that we suggested. Okay, and this is reported on Democracy Now. And I think that's what she may have been referring to.
Yeah, I think so. It's important to understand, from my perspective, just mine, I cannot say exactly what was happening. There are elements within Iran who would have an aggression of that sort. There also is no real evidence, as far as I'm concerned, that mines were used against those two ships. Nor am I clear exactly what's going on. I know that it's a what's called a casus belli, which will serve the interests of Trump in having a war in the region, and I'm very, very frightened of that. I don't think such a war would go well in any event, not that there's ever really a winner in such situations. I think it's a very scary thing, and the reason why I think it's likely is that Donald Trump is cornered. He's a criminal. He's part of a mafia-like conspiracy on very many levels throughout his history. He's an ignorant man. He's an egotistical man. And he is being guided or led by Cold Warrior types who would love to see another war. So it makes me very frightened. And meanwhile, and this is important, the Democratic Party, with multiple candidates, most of them very excellent, is struggling to come up with a campaign to knock Trump out. And I'm afraid they're going to end up with an old-timer whose personal politics and history is not all that good, and that's Joe Biden. Charming fellow though he is, if you don't mind somebody who likes to touch you. All right, I'm going to get some more...
Just a minute. Can I say something else?
Sure, hello? Go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to mention that this ship was a Japanese ship, and they had been visiting Iran in an attempt to establish relationships with Iran. I think this was reported on Democracy Now. And the other thing, this woman talked about this wonderful book, All Quiet on the Western Front. I saw the movie of that. And boy, someone who was with me at the time said, if anyone could see this movie, there would be no wars, no more wars. Really, you should read the book and see the movie. It's wonderful. Okay.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, it actually is a very good book, and it's from the perspective of Germany, and it's a great film. It is also a great book. The fact of the matter is that there was a very powerful pacifist movement in the United States against World War I. President Wilson betrayed that movement because he promised there would be no war. We entered the war at a later stage, and we exploited the situation. The peace that was made, and remember the war, World War I, was really about colonies in Africa and shipping control. That war should not have happened, and was very disastrous. The consequence of that for Germany was very, very cruel and harsh and economically damaging, which in turn led directly to Nazism. So this is important to know. I want to go on to other callers. 231-8187. I think we have a Mark online.
Hi, Joe.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call. And I applaud Francis's horror about war. And war is a racket. And the UN Charter sought to outlaw war,
right?
To deny the right to war, and even called the threat of war a violation of international law. I want to recommend a movie, a Dustin Hoffman movie, Wag the Dog.
Oh, that's a great movie, yes.
Yeah. In which he shows how easy it is to convince the people that Albania is a terrorist threat.
Right.
Yeah. I translated a great article by a professor of international law at the University of Bonn, and I put it on Portland Indie Media, titled The U.S. Under President Trump, Grave Digger of International Law. And he kind of lists, he outlines all of the incredible violations, how the U.N. Defunded UNESCO back in the Reagan time.
Mm-hmm.
Defunded the International Court of Justice when they lost a decision on the mining of the harbor near Nicaragua.
Right.
Defunded the Human Rights Council, never voted for a children's resolution. So I recommend the article to you on how we have turned away from the rule-based international order, and we have somehow supported the right of the stronger, which is the law of the jungle. You know, I don't know if our disabled, dysfunctional political system has much consciousness of history or truth telling. They're really sold out, you know.
Well, one of the problems is we have a lot of domestic issues, unfinished business in building equal rights for women, persons of color, and persons who are whose sexual orientation is not the official recognized heterosexual scene. And I think that the consequence of that, those domestic issues, is overwhelmingly present in our lives. Meanwhile, on the world stage, the United States is still quite aggressive and is being led now by insane warriors.
Now, countries are no longer running after rock and roll, Coca-Cola, and financial products. Right.
Well, I don't know what you mean by that, but go ahead.
We have to find a way to a multipolar world, and we have to accept the new reality, you know, that we don't dominate the world economy, and that we are very dependent. You know, the Chinese people work for nothing, and they supply all our technology. I'll be happy camper when Trump says one positive word. And Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren are super qualified to reverse the 40-year neoliberal rollback, you know, to reverse the exploding inequality and the corporatocracy.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a happy time. It will be a happy time, you know. Trump has turned the stomachs of the nation, and the media is always twisting things, so it's blurring the indignation.
You know, I think that's true, and I think there's a kind of a time warp in the media where they're still stuck in a language and an idea set that is no longer appropriate to the neo-fascism that we're seeing with Trump. Anyway, I appreciate your call, and
I think it's
really an interesting time, which means scary time. I do want to make one comment about Bernie Sanders. During the previous campaign, the campaign in which Trump rose to power, the error that Bernie Sanders made in Seattle was very significant. If you remember, a young African-American woman got up on the stage with him and said, "Do you support Black Lives Matter?" And what he did not know was that it was a real organization, that it was a real effort by young black people to assert the power and the right of African-Americans, particularly young people, to be free of police harassment. He blew that. And when he blew that, he lost a lot of African-American support. I don't know if he can ever gain that back. I don't know if he's the right candidate. I'm not trying to make a judgment about who should be the Democratic candidate, but I remember that very strongly. I also remember the charmingness of his campaign, particularly when the pretty bird landed on his podium here in Portland, Oregon. Anyway, let's get some more callers in. Do we have a John?
Yep.
John number three. Hi, John.
John number three. Good morning. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Good. So one thing I'm interested in keep talking about is if we go with the premise that Russia helped get Trump elected.
It's not a premise. It's a fact.
So if we go with that fact.
Yeah.
and Iran is an ally of Russia. It doesn't make sense that we would start a war with Iran. So
yeah, I'm not sure that Iran is an ally. I think that Russia is operating in the world of opportunity, and that means that there's alliances that can shift very easily. But go ahead.
Yeah, no, I feel like Iran and Russia have been, you know, whatever their alliance is, has been pretty historic and long-term, and I don't think it's in their interest to see a war with the United States and Iran. So, I mean, I agree with your premise that Trump is desperate, and, you know, a likely scenario of war is scary and keeps people wanting to, like, keep the status quo, but I don't think it'll go all the way, so... That's just my comment.
Okay, thank you very much for the call, man. We have another caller, 231-8187. Milton, you're on the air.
Yes. Analogously to how you were trained in civil disobedience by Dorothy Day.
You have a good memory. Go ahead.
Catholic worker people in New York in the early 60s. Well, I was trained... by the Mobilization for Survival and the Quakers of the War Resisters League in the late 70s to participate in the rebirth of the nuclear disarmament movement after Vietnam ended, and we had a die-in at the UN at the first special session on nuclear disarmament.
I remember that.
So that was the first time I was ever arrested for civil disobedience. But I have, you know, a disagreement about the principled moral consistency of the left. Concisely put, you're talking today about possible war with Iran.
Yeah.
And I mean, in terms of how. You know, progressive and potentially constructive. You know, I would like to be. If it had been up to me, I wasn't born. But if it had been up to me, I would have had Eisenhower, you know, sign a defensive treaty with Mossadegh and tell the British to go stuff it in terms of stealing their oil. And I would have also had Eisenhower. You know, apologize to Ho Chi Minh for Woodrow Wilson not meeting with him at Versailles, and allow Ho Chi Minh to unify Vietnam as long as they stayed neutral in the Cold War. But Iran, in 1979, had its legitimate revolution taken over by what the famous MIT scholar Bruce Mashwish called a revolutionary ascetic, a totalitarian sadist in the form of the fundamentalist Ayatollah Khomeini. And they took our basically innocent hostages for more than a year and gave us Ronald Reagan as president indirectly as a result.
I'm sorry,
Carter.
I've run out of time.
Why shouldn't the Iranian people get a new, more democratic, more modernist, less gay-hating, less Jew-hating government?
Well, I'm all for that, but it's not the business of the United States to tell Iran what it ought to do. And I have to let you go because we've run out of time. I want to thank everybody, and I want to urge you to stay tuned to KBOL and remind you it's the best in music and public affairs broadcasting. To the USA.
KBOO programming is made possible by cable member listeners and support from Grendel's Coffee House, located at East Burnside Street and 8th Avenue in Portland, offering organic coffee, daily soup specials, sandwiches, and more for breakfast and lunch. Open daily until 6 p.m. More information is available on the Grendel's Facebook page and by phone at 503-595-9550.
Meet me on the mountain. KBOO wants you to meet us where the music's at.
You can see awesome live bands like Fruition.
That's right. KBOO wants to send you to a concert this summer.
Just enter the KBOO Summer Music Raffle, where three lucky winners will choose in order from three awesome events.
You could win 2 3-day passes to the Northwest String Summit, July 19th to the 21st.
A pair of Sunday tickets to Pickathon, August 4th.
A pair of tickets to Lord Huron and Shaky Graves at the Oregon Zoo, August 12th.
Tickets are just $5, and if you buy four, you get an extra raffle chance for free.
Enter at kboo.fm/give, or you can buy tickets in person at Music Millennium or Grendel's Coffee.
Deadline to enter is July 7th. See kboo.fm/summermusicraffle for full rules and details.
Enter now for your chance to win.
La radio comunitaria de KBOO es un orgulloso copatrocinador de Explorando el Columbia Slew, el cual se llevará a cabo el sábado 22 de junio de las 11 a las 3 de la tarde en el Parque Natural Whitaker Ponds en Portland. Explorando el Columbia Slew es el 17º festival familiar que ofrece actividades basadas en la naturaleza, es en español e inglés y además incluye excursiones guiadas en canoa, música en vivo, bailes folclóricos, cuentos, artes, manualidades y más. Nuevamente, Explorando el Columbia Slew es el próximo sábado 22 de junio de 11 de la mañana a 3 de la tarde en el Parque Natural Whitaker Ponds, en el 7040 del Noroeste y la 47 en Portland. Para más información, en kboo.fm, en el lado derecho de la página de inicio, en eventos comunitarios.
Good morning. You are listening to KBOO Portland. It is the top of the hour at 9 o'clock. At 10 on Flashpoints, Japanese victims of U.S. internment speak out against the brutal treatment of fleeing migrants. At 11, Stage and Studio brings the special testimonies, missing and murdered Indigenous women and girls from Native Voice One. At 11:30, Art Focus, Joseph Galavan interviews Mary Weaver Chapin of the Portland Art Museum about the World's Fair in Paris of 1900. Don't forget that you can hear all of these programs after they air on kboo.fm or on iTunes and Google Play. All of these KBOO programs are made possible by member support. If you'd like to become a member, go to kboo.fm or use our mobile app and click on Donate. And now it's alternative radio. Paul Street talks about the anti-democratic nature of the U.S. Constitution.